Hey, everybody, it's Bob Saget's here for you. That's my full name. I've legally changed my name from Bob Saget to Bob Saget's here for you. This is a show I think your kids can listen to. I don't think we're going to curse because it's Louis Anderson, and he is America's sweetheart and an old friend of mine because we started kind of at the same time at the Comedy Store in L.A. He's so amazing. He is a true stand-up, an exceptional stand-up, which we're going to talk about because I've known him since he came out to L.A., and also three-time Emmy Award winner, right? For his animated series, Life with Louis, and of course, for Baskets, for playing Zach Galifianakis' mom so beautifully. It's seamless, except for the things he wore. I'm sure they had extra seams, but we'll talk about that because I want to do that joke again for Louis and have him go, oh, Bob, you can do better than that. Anyway, rate, review, subscribe, 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 subscribe. That's how you keep a podcast going. And I love doing this one. And we're coming up to 100 shows, and I'm so happy to have Louis on today. If you're going to see his tour schedule, it's opening up. I know he's got some dates in September coming up. But any chance you have to see Louis Anderson, jump at it, because he's just one of the most wonderful stand-ups and such a great person and so loving and so just damn wonderful. Here he is, my friend, Mr. Louis Anderson. Louis.
How are you, honey?
I'm really good. Maybe
glasses?
tilt it down a little. I like glasses.
Yeah.
Tilt it down a little so it's a little less. That's my director thing. Oh, you look good. This is very Alistair Cook.
Like, but I also can do this.
I like the glasses.
I do too. Let's see if we can.
And you want to? You want me to clean them?
Clean.
I have a microfiber.
I'm sure you do.
Well, that's look. Finally, you do the first dick joke. I didn't even touch it. You love your coffee. I just watched you with Conan. I hadn't seen the last appearance where you did it Zoom-wise.
Oh, and that was fun.
It was fun. And what's great about Conan, and I think it's missed, is that it's a 25-minute interview. When he loves somebody, he runs the whole damn thing. And
yeah.
That was so much fun to watch. And I feel like I caught up with you through that. But I've been catching up because I love Baskets. But I haven't talked to you. Not the show. I just like Baskets.
Louis. One time I was in Ohio. They have a building that is from a basket company. I'll have to send you the photo. It's an actual basket. A giant picnic. It's a picnic basket.
Right.
The building.
Because they make baskets?
Huh?
They make baskets.
Yeah, I think they make baskets, but it's an older building, and I just went, oh, that's a basket. You know, that dumb thing. You know, I'm a Midwesterner, so I go, oh, this will make a great photo.
Do you do selfies?
Here's to you, Bob. Here's to you.
Here's to you. I've got a sparkling. Do you drink sparkling as well, or do you love... Here's to you, Louis. Congrats on everything.
I love sparkling.
Me too. It gives me the bubbles I need.
Yeah, like I need bubbles.
You're bubbly.
You look very young.
Well, I lost weight. I lost weight by worry. And and my wife... I just turned 65, and my wife is 42. So people give me crap. Not people, kids on the internet, because that's a big age difference. To people, but it's not to me, because that was kind of always, I'm always been, I guess, younger in my mind, but.
You're a comic.
I'm a comic.
You're an entertainer. You know, we're not built for older people.
That doesn't sound, it sounds wrong, but it's not.
It just means, is wrong. No, it isn't. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter.
No, it's energy. It's our energy. It's the energy. You give out the energy of a kid. When I look at you, Conan said this about you, like he sees a baby's face, but I think of you as the kid that I did his first Tonight Show. I saw you right, you know, like a day after you did it.
You saw me that night, I think, because you were at the store.
Yeah, yeah.
The best thing happened to me that night for my ego. You know, I did the Tonight Show and I went to the store So they, you know, they played outside. I knew it was coming.
Right.
You know, it was a really big thing for me. It's the biggest thing up till then that I'd ever done. And, you know, I'm feeling how great I am and all that bullshit. And a guy comes up to me and he goes, "Hey, are you Louis Anderson?" I go, "Yes, I am." And I stuck my hand out. He goes, "I don't want to meet you. Can you move your car? You got me penned in."
And you literally, I just watched that set. I haven't seen anybody crush like that, where the every single, everything aligned, everything, every joke you teed up, you hit over the park. And you did some of those jokes on the recent Conan, because they are like my first 6 minutes. I did them for 10 years because they were they were me.
You know, that's the great thing. Like, I had 9 Tonight shows prepared by the time I got my first one.
That's why you're Louis Anderson, though.
But I mean, I was just like, I'm going to do Johnny. I'm going to do that show. I want to do the anniversary show. I want to host a show. I want to get my own show. You know, because I was in a very small goal thing. Get on the Comedy Store, my name on it.
Right.
Get on the Tonight Show. Get out of bed without help. No.
No railings, no assist.
But
no,
it was,
showers, you know, without rails.
Yeah. But the third thing that people might not know about is I wanted to be a talk show host.
I suspected did you do a talk show? Was that a Louis show?
No, I did. Joan's husband, God rest his soul and her soul, had committed suicide, and Joan took some time off, and they offered me a week or a few days or something, and they offered Arsenio a few days, and I did it for a few days, and I said to myself, "Oh, I can't do this. This isn't me." I mean, you know, you have to make people so interesting.
Yeah.
You know, actors and actresses, and nothing personal, but comics all have jokes and a story, and, you know, and I went, "Oh, I don't want to, I like this. I'd love to come and sit once in a while and do it, but no, I don't want to do this." It was a hard decision in one sense, but it was the right decision.
Well, Gary Shandling made the same decision. I mean, he had the offer and decided I can't do it. And then he went and made Larry Sanders years later, which was,
I mean,
that was a full circle of how you can accomplish it without doing his version of it, which was brilliance.
That changed TV, that show.
It did.
That was the first Larry David show, in a sense.
It was.
Don't you think? That was the first everything. Of course, somebody's going to say, no, this was the first.
Well, Dick Van Dyke showed the writer's room, but it was still performed.
No, this is different.
This was like single camera film, inside the minds of what these people are in complex personalities and what a comic's like.
This is the first time we knew the person that was doing it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, Dick Van Dyke and all those, but we didn't know him.
Or Jack Benny.
Actors knew him and that, but we didn't know them. Like, you know, we knew Gary and he wasn't exactly himself, but he wasn't exactly not himself.
No. No, it was a strong hybrid version of him. Were you influenced by him at all? You'd already been Jack Benny'd, right?
I've been Jack Benny'd, but I used to stand in the back and go, "Ugh, I can never write a joke that good." And just honestly,
particular joke, I wrote it for him. That joke. You talked about. No, he's the first friend I made in L.A. It was 19.
Well, you guys are a lot alike. You guys have a very similar demeanor.
Well,
you know, he's a little demeaner than you are, but.
You went through a lot. His and my friendship through a lot. You know the story. And it was, and I always have love for him. And it was.
There's a whole group of difficult guys. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I'm going to.
No, you should. It's your, you're the guest. I just.
But there's a whole group of you guys. There's you and there's. You know, like the guys who are monologists, who are just have a patter. Maybe it's New York. I hate to say it's New York, but it's you and Kevin.
Nealon?
Yeah, Kevin Nealon. And all those, all you guys who have that, that Johnny liked, I'll say. All you guys that were stand-ups. I was more of a character. I think, you know, like I was a cross between Jack Benny, Bob Hope, and Jonathan Winters. That's kind of how I always saw myself.
But it was still, you shared experience, and the more you did your stand-up, you still tell jokes, but more of you got revealed as you evolved and got older. Right.
But, you know, Bob Hope was my very first joke-telling guy. Hey, everybody, how are you? I just wanted to let you know I'm going to be telling a joke, so listen up. You know, Bob was the greatest at letting you know, hey, yeah. Everybody, wake up over here. Anyway, I came out here. Joey Heatherton, everyone, bring her out.
He broke the fourth wall.
He let them know it was coming because he knew. Oh, he was just a great. He could deliver a joke, man. Oh God, he could deliver a joke. I saw him once at the. You know, he never played Vegas outside of corporates.
I didn't know that.
He never ever had a run there or anything. You know, he was the kind of guy who just decided certain things. But so Frank Rio, do you remember Frank Rio?
Yeah.
He was an agent at Triad and then Regency. And then he was my personal appearance, and he had Bob. I said, Frank, he goes, Louie, I was at Bally's. He goes, Bob's doing a corporate in the ballroom. Oh, I said, okay, I'm going to come down after my show. Can I meet him? He goes, yeah. And I got down there just probably 15 minutes after he started. He did an hour. He did 90 minutes after I got there. And then brought Linda up. Wasn't that his wife, right?
I don't recall.
I think it was Linda or someone like that. It was a woman's name. Barbara. I think it might have been Barbara.
It was Barbara. Or Dolores?
Dolores, maybe. I don't know.
It was Dolores. Because
she would come up and sing, thanks for the memories. The time I wrote a check. The time you cashed a check. The time you did the da 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 da. I fell over on the deck. Oh, thank you so much. And I always thought, wow, that's just so, what a nice way to say to the audience, get ready to stand up and applaud me. And then, so I'm backstage, you know how they built those stages in the big ballrooms. You know, they're like Home Depot stages.
Right, right.
And Bob comes off. They're screaming for him. Comes up. And he gets to the back, and there's a little three-step thing. And I'm like,
how old are you then?
70.
So you're Benjamin Button.
No, I think I'm, I had to be in my 30s because I didn't get out to L.A. till I was 31. So.
Right, so he's not a youngster at this point.
Yeah, no, he's not.
He insisted on being on risers because of the USO show, so he wanted every show he ever did to be on just those cardboard things with metal stands.
You know, I think he probably did not care, except I think he cared about little things like all of us do.
Right. I want to know where this is. Where are you going to put the stool?
Right.
Like silly things.
Or somebody with him knew Bob likes it here.
Yes. Yeah.
He wants a loaded 45 here in case things don't go well.
Right.
So Bob comes off to that little thing, and I'm back there. Bob, oh, Bob, oh, Bob, oh. And Bob gets within earshot of everyone. He goes, I almost broke my fucking neck on those wires when I walked out there. I could have fucking died.
So he's
walking
out there. He's in good spirits.
I almost broke my fucking neck. Right? And I go, yeah, tell him, Bob. And Then Frank Wheel goes, Bob, this is a young comic who really thinks you're the greatest. Hi, kid. How are you? Anyway, whoever set those fucking...
So is it really, it was a beautiful thing for, he'll never forget it.
Well, I liked it because he's right. That's the kind of thing that gets in a comic's head.
Yeah.
And we can't help ourselves.
I was 23
we take little things much too personal, but we're just, you know, we're full of anxiety. We want to do well.
Right.
And he would have fell there. He would have never probably recovered. He could have broke his neck. You know, anything could have happened, but the fact he held on to that for almost 2 hours because it was on his way out, and let us have it. Let somebody have it.
Do you find yourself doing that? Do you find that ever? You never get angry like that, do you?
Yeah, I get mad about stuff. Like when I say when a person is drunk and is a heckler.
Right. I do that too.
I go, time for you to shut up or go.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm nice because if you get
I buy them drinks and then I send them away because they're driving.
If I get mad, I lose the whole crowd.
Yeah.
I lose the whole crowd because they go, Louis gets mad. Pass it on.
I've never seen you mad.
I get mad on stage, but I kick some people out.
Yeah, I do that. I go, you're not going to ruin it for these other people.
I always say, you're not going to ruin it for me.
You're smart.
No, I say the same thing as you. I just was lying right there.
did you ever want to be a therapist or a minister? Because
I did counseling and therapy. But God, you know, I when I did stand-up comedy the first time, I said, this is almost like therapy. This is a better therapeutic thing.
But how about being a therapist? Did you want to be a therapist or be a...
I was a terrible student, Bob. I could have never stuck with the student part. Yes, I wanted to rule. I actually I was a political science major. I wanted to be president.
I'd vote for you. I think everybody would.
No, but I really thought I wanted to be president because...
You actually, at like 9 years old, wanted to be president?
No, I mean, like 9 years old.
In college. Poli-sci.
I went to a little university in the 70s called Antioch Communiversity. Antioch set up these satellite schools in the poor areas.
Right.
I grew up really poor. And so me and my brother...
People, save your laughs till the end.
Yeah. But people were, I enjoyed it. I went with my brother. He and I went. And I got a lot out of it. I learned a lot about, you know, what it's like. We were the only white kids in it.
Right.
And I learned a lot from that. I grew up in the project, so I'd been around all kinds of people. But
right.
But I didn't realize, you know, there was a whole different focus on life. And it was really good for me. But again, I was looking for joy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was really looking, Bob, I think you were too, right?
I still to this day, even when I've had my blues, I still wake up pretty positive, even when things are hard and it just takes the day to wear me down.
Or someone saying something or not communicating or being mean or
meanness.
An offhanded comment or
the news,
you know,
or a family thing.
Means.
Yeah.
We're super sensitive beings.
Louis, you had, we never talked about this. We always just did jokes and hung out. Basically, it was like a playgroup for us. We met, that's why comics have a kinship. We met at a time where I would watch you on stage, you would watch me on stage, inadvertently sometimes, even though we're in our own head to do our stuff. And so it was like little kids, we were teenagers hanging. That we got that experience. Yeah. So we have all fond memories.
And also, you know, Bob, that group that we had, we were out for each other. We weren't out to hurt each other. We were out for help. We like, here, Bob, I don't know if this is a good tag or not, but this might work. Or the same with me. I always wanted to be able to write a tag for Gary, but then I just was too embarrassed.
Oh, he would have loved having you as a writer.
I know, but I was too intimidated because, you know, I idolized all the other, you know, like, I don't think I'm any, like any of the other comics that I worked with for the most part. And I thought that was an advantage for me because I wasn't right. trying to, I wasn't competing. You know, people come out, they're going to talk about this and that. I'm going to talk about butter. You know, you're not going
to. But that apply, it doesn't apply to the other comics trying to hit the edge, hit the Lenny Bruce, right, Richard but edge. But they were, you were so appreciated by Richard, you know, by yeah, all the yeah, people no, we talk about. We all talk about the same people. I mean, it's Richard and Robin. And we,
right. share, and we knew them. I mean, we hung yeah. around with them. And Robin and Richard, they were all fun to be around. And
yep,
just all of them, you know. And Eddie, when he'd come by, he was just Eddie and Chris Rock. And, you know, all those guys. We were all just, we were really in a rarefied air and we didn't know it.
Because the comedy boom happened. And then that was the 80s. Steve Martin kind of started the rock star status with large things, large venues.
He did a dime trick in a 17,000 seat thing. Now for the dime trick. And I went, oh, you people have no idea how much this means to Steve right now.
But also, that's the Bob Hope in him. That's the winking, because, oh, he was this. We have a genius being silly. And sending up that he's even doing an act, which he learned to do at Disneyland. You know, he was a guy that played the banjo and did balloons. But you did something which was put your soul into everything, every single thing you ever did. And I always respected the shit out of you for how you put all of yourself into everything. Even, and I have that same hope that I do that, which is, I mean, it could be a set or it could be, you know, life with Louis, or, I mean, everything.
Yeah, I think that you and I, like I say, I think we're tethered to the life we had as kids. And we're always pulling that up to see on the stringer when you're fishing, is there any new catch on there? Is there any, should I look over this thing here? You know, like recently, I was thinking, so many people I know that are younger actually have suddenly, because my parents are gone, your parents are gone, have lost their parents recently to Fox News or to politics. And I go, would I have lost, could I have lost my parents that way? And so I've been working on a bit that I'm going to do in my special. I'm doing a virtual special with Rush Kicks on June 12th. And I'm going to do that bit. What if I would have lost my parents? How would I get them back? Because I think it's important to know that there's a way of getting your parents back. You know, I don't think you have to.
Can you share? Can you share?
I can just tell you that I don't think you should. I think you should stop trying to change people's opinion.
Yeah.
Just like they couldn't change your opinion when you were a teenager. Like, no matter what your parents said, you go, you're crazy. We don't believe that. The war is wrong. The war is wrong, Mom, Dad. The war is wrong. You don't know nothing about war. You're right. But this is wrong. And I'm not going to agree with it. But you didn't love them any less.
No. I did. I did. You met my parents. You know, I met your mom. We know each. I never met your dad. So you were estranged from your dad very young?
No, I wasn't estranged. My dad died shortly after. And I started in 78. And my dad died in 79 or at the end of 78. So he did get to see me do stand up, though. He said to me, you're going to make it, Louis. You got what it takes. He was a musician, very famous musician in his own right, but an alcoholic and had 11 children. So he had to go back. He had to work because at that time, when you're a trumpet player in a band, it's not your band. You're not going to make enough money to support 11 kids. And he would work two jobs. I remember he used to get up at 5 and work a job and then come back and have lunch and then go to his other job. So I learned my work ethic from my dad. That's why I'm always saying to my management or Brillstein there, partners or ICM, where you
have all the same reps.
Yeah, we have the same reps. I always say to them, I need to work.
Right.
Can you get me some work? And so, yeah.
Well, let me ask you, because everything that I read about, and I don't read about Friends, but, you know, Wikipedia exists, and you know if it's on Wikipedia that it's true.
Yeah.
I can go in there and change my own Wikipedia because they had my parents' names wrong once. So, but your dad, it says that he was abusive in stuff I've read, but you're explaining why he was barely, and my dad went through the depression. His father died of alcoholism because he couldn't raise the kids, and he died of liver cancer at 47. And my dad raised the kids. Where did you fall in this huge flock of children?
I was 10th. So I was 10th of 11. So, you know, I had a brother almost 20 years older than me. And so we were kind of, my parents were like, they were the nicest version of themselves they could have been by then.
Right.
In 1969, my dad quit drinking, but didn't do any work on himself. He just became a little, he was still mean, but not like as abusive.
Right.
He never did hit me. You know, sometimes he would be mean to my mom, and that was always really traumatic for me. But my dad, you know, at 69, he just said, I'm going to quit drinking. And he did. And my mom turned to me, the optimist of the world, and said, I don't know, Louis. I told you he quit. I go, what? 69, for God's sake. What?
Thanks for the use of
word. I knew he would. Yeah, I just said, you wore him down, Mom. You wore him down. I know people.
Mm-hmm. Who raised you then? It was your mom, but the other siblings, was there a closest sibling? Your brother?
My sisters. I had my sisters. Lisa and Sheila, Shanna, Rhea, Mary. You know, I had all my sisters.
How do you have that many kids that you have to name them all?
Yeah, you know, I do a joke in my act to honor them at the end of the show, and I name them all, you know, to let people know that they are real people, I think.
Right.
You know. But yeah, I mean, I think I finally was named Louie, and my dad was named Louie. But I never knew that because they called him Andy. So I was like 10 before I knew I was named after my dad, which is really funny.
That so much was not communicated in your family.
And I think a lot of families, I don't think people talked about stuff.
They don't.
I didn't know my dad was married until I was 27. That he was married once before.
That's bizarre.
Because, you know, when you get that from those kind of families, you don't talk about that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you make excuses. Well, you can't come over because, you know, my dad's not feeling well today. You can't come over because my dad might come home drunk and I don't want you to see it.
Right.
That's just the truth about all that. But, you know, like, I always think, even though my dad was a drunk, I think him staying around mattered. I think there was sunshine, you know, like dad shine.
Right.
Father brightness. That just being in his proximity gave me some value.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, because apparently...
Even though he was yelling at me when I helped him fix the car.
Right.
I was helping him fix the car.
But there was love exchanged. You could feel it because you said he didn't hit you. So if you get that love, that's what gets you to come back for more and not just say, I'm not going to put up with this.
I think it's harder when people split up and leave only because the kids take it personal like it's their fault. Oh, they must have left because of me.
Well, I know some people, and it is their fault that their parents left.
That's the terrible thing about it being a comic. You can be in the worst situation, but there's a really good joke there, and you either file it or you tell it, and everybody groans, and you go, funny though, right?
All right, we're back. That was the break. So you're kind enough to do this right before you're traveling. Are you going to go do a gig? Are you going somewhere?
I'm going home. I'm in L.A.
So,
but I couldn't arrange to come there. And But he wanted to do it, of course. And so I said, oh, I'll just do it before I leave. And then you were able to get accommodate me time-wise.
Of course, of course. And but where are you going? That's what I want to know.
Las Vegas, I live.
That's everything I
want. Henderson. I live in Henderson.
Right.
I've been there for 13 years because, you know, some 13 years ago, somebody called and said, you want to do a residency? Adam Steck over at the Excalibur, the old Catch a Rising Star showroom. And so I did 6 years there. And then a few years at Palace Station, which was great. They built a little showroom for me. And then downtown for a couple of years. Then I got baskets. And then I didn't do a residency. But I've been working with Harry over at the Laugh Factory, doing some Monday, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays, getting ready for my special.
I'm going to come in to the Laugh Factory because I want to go back. It's time. And I've got
that would be fun. That'd
I have
fun.
Some gigs I'm doing. You're on the road. I see in September you're doing some theaters back
out. Yeah, I'm doing some Rita. Rita and I still do gigs together.
I love her.
Yeah, she's great. You know, she's just... I mean, we all did the Rodney's.
Well, that's what I wanted to say. 1985, for people that aren't aware, if they go, it's the most Googleable thing ever because everybody that's in it, that's the special that Kennison
was. It was the first one too, right?
It was the 9th annual, the first one Rodney ever hosted.
Oh, right.
So the other ones were, you know, they were on and some were good. I think Robert Klein hosted one of them. I don't know if
Rodney started like a... I mean, they went up. I don't want to be great, belittle the other ones, but
right.
They, along with comedy becoming even more popular, Rodney was the ultimate host because he loved comics so much.
Well, he loved you, and I loved him, and we were close with him. We
yeah. I was with him. I'm not bragging or saying anything special about me, but I was there for the last. I was there every day for 30 days at UCLA until he passed away.
Yeah.
I had a connection.
Me
I had
too.
I had this connection. Yeah, you were there. People came all the time. But I went because I needed to go too. I was grieving all kinds of things.
Yeah.
Grieving is such a healing thing. But especially I felt so close to that guy because he was like as close as I was going to get to a father figure in comedy.
Yeah. He was a person that couldn't be stopped. He had changed his name 3 times. He
had
gone through all this, and he was 59. People don't know this when he got Caddyshack. 59. And, you know, I look at my career that way. I've said this before, but on here on this podcast that I actually love doing because it's conversational. It's not a talk show kind of thing.
It's fabulous. But it's fabulous.
I love talking to friends, especially. This is a gift for me because you and I would love to see you. So I'm going to go to Vegas when I'm there and find you. And
I'm very busy, but I'll try to make room for you.
I'll bring you a coffee.
I'm kidding. Of course, I'd love to see you. You know, But go ahead and finish that thought you
had. I was just going to say that I wanted to bring up Rodney's memorial. So we were close to him. We were in the room. You were there more than me as he was going. And I officiated the service, but you were the, and I remember Leno heckled me. That was nice. And you actually, when Jay heckled me, you said, Bob, he didn't mean anything. Right away you knew that here I am, my heart's open, and he takes like a swipe at me, which that's just his way. You know, it was just, but it was a personal swipe, and you were right there like an angel of the whole thing, and you kind of were the minister.
I mean, Rodney wasn't that very outwardly religious, but I think comics all have some sort of faith. And so I just knew that must have really hurt you, what he did. And so also I thought, you know, I wasn't going to let you hang there. I go, no way. I mean, Jay just did it probably out of nervousness.
He totally did. He's been gracious to me for years after that.
Yeah.
That had nothing to do with, you take a swipe at someone that you think can take a punch.
Yeah, maybe. But, you know, also, maybe he needed to do that rather than burst out crying.
I don't think he does that.
I bet he does. I bet he does.
I bet he does, too. I bet he does, too. So that service, I mean, we all felt like we were losing. Everybody was, that was there, you know, his son. You know, that Brian, it was very hard. And that's why I loved you being a minister, because it was a bridge between his widow Joan and Melanie and Brian. And that was not an easy time for us. And you really did put a blessing over, because Rodney believed, like Tony Soprano, you die, you go to black, man. There's nothing there, man.
Yeah.
It just ends. But you, you do that for people. You do it. You do that for other people sometimes.
You do it for the living people, for sure.
Yeah, you're to me so. I want to see you do a part where you played priests before, haven't you?
No, but there's a part out there in a Holly LaRonde, who her and her husband Greg Hess do a show called Mega. It's a fake mega church. And she wrote a thing called the Good News Circle. Her family were Christian rock bands with the Billy Graham Crusades.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a part, I said, I'd like to play Swaggart or someone in there, you know, because that was the time when the whole world, the religious world, got together with the Republicans. That was all that stuff right there. And right. I just thought it would be interesting. I want to play a lot of serious parts. I'm always up for it. But I'm always up to play. You know, I just did a show on it. I just wrapped two episodes here. That's why I was in LA. Of a show called 20s, T-W-E-N-T-I-E-S, all written out. I'm BET with JoJo T. Gibbs, who's a comedian, and she plays a queer girl who's trying to find her life as a writer in LA. And it's a beautiful little thing. I just have a little kind of mentoring part in there as a delivery. She's got to get a regular job. And I play her mentor in like a UPS driver. and I just was honored that they wanted me to play this nice little part, because the show is really an important show. It's a beautiful show.
I can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
Louis, you're such a good actor. I mean,
you know what? Can I just go back to one thing, which I appreciate that? But you know, Rodney, 59, right?
Right.
Me at 61 playing Christine.
Right. I was
changed thinking everything for me.
Mm-hmm.
Acting wise, I'd never really been recognized as an actor for the most part. But when I did that part, people would say, "You can act." And I go, "Yeah, I knew that. I know it."
Well, also playing Christine, it's seamless what you did. It wasn't acting. It was you took your mother's character, but it was Christine. You were.
That was another person. You know, it was a cross between my mom and my five sisters and my dad and my whole everything I saw in my life. And I just put it all together. And I just, you know, I really made Louis Anderson disappear as a character.
Mm-hmm.
That was my goal in the whole thing, bro. I said to people, don't call me Louie on the set. Call me
right.
Christine or Mama Baskets. Or your Highness.
And I saw that you talking about how they wanted a tone. They wanted to figure out who the tone of the character was. It was Zach. And who's the other wonderful creator of the show?
And Jonathan Kreisel and Louis C.K. And right. they were all together, and Zach made a sound. He went, ah. And Louis said, "You mean like Louis Anderson?" And Zach said, "Yeah." I've heard varying stories, but then they called me and said, "Hey, will you do a part on Zach's new sitcom on FX?" And I said, "Yeah." I mean, when those guys call you, you go, "Yeah." And then they said, "Will you play the mother?" And I go, "Yes." Wasn't right. even it was just like, oh yeah, that works for me. Did you know I did my mom's voice in the show?
Yeah.
When I do stand up, and you saw it, you met my mom.
Some people might have been surprised or going, wow, how did he pull that off? But it's so organic. It's everything you've been doing since the very beginning.
Who I always thought I'd play my dad character.
Right.
But I ended up playing my mom. So isn't that ironic in the big scheme of things, huh?
On a much smaller level, I do my mom's voice. I did it in a special because, you know, I'm going to come back, Bobby. I'm going to come back as a dove. And
do you know, hey, Bob, can I tell you something?
Please.
I always think, you know, doves are those things. And when the doves are by my house and they peck at the window where I'm sitting, I always think of my mom. That's so ironic.
And my mother used Dove soap. Did your mother use Dove soap?
Absolutely. We had to have Dove soap.
Because it was white and buttery.
Get the Dove. It's a little more expensive, but I'm not going to have that other stuff.
It's more expensive than Dial?
I think it was. I think Dial was more expensive. No, I think it was more. I don't know.
I bet it was because it had cream in it.
And didn't Dove float? Did Dove? No, Ivory floated.
I forgot about Ivory till just this moment.
Ivory was like, what is this?
Right. Yeah, Ivory was the opposite of Dove. It was like using some kind of spray cleaner on yourself because it made your skin dry, whereas Dove was very luxuriating and moisturizing.
You know, isn't that funny? When we grew up, what was luxurious? You know what I'm saying?
Dove soap.
You know what I mean? Like the luxury that we were really the guinea pigs for all that advertising back then.
Right.
We really, that was the, you know, the high point our youth getting marketed to, you know, for Winston cigarettes or Marlboros or Lucky Strike. And
look at life and how people don't want to adhere to anything that science proves, but then science changes hourly. But when you think about it, they were coming out. I mean, cigarettes, nobody stopped it. You know, can you imagine?
They still don't stop it.
They don't, but they try, and they, you know, no smoking here, no smoking on the airplane.
I mean, it's still an amazing thing that you can buy a cigarette.
Right.
But I suppose people would steal them or do something, but, you know, they're guaranteed to not necessarily kill you, but not make your life better.
Right.
No matter what. I mean, yeah, I get the addiction part, and that I know all about that, but, you know, there's nobody who survives cigarettes.
That's that. My dad used to smoke 6 packs a day and then had heart attacks and then survived. I was lucky. Did your dad smoke?
He rolled his own as he got older. He had that velvet cigarette paper. Mm-hmm. And roll it. Looked like he was smoking joints.
Right. You my know? Dad was Camel, no filter.
Oh, yeah. My dad smoked Pall Mall. And I go, those are horrifying. And then I tried them. And I liked them. And I quit. Now it's got to be 17 years.
I didn't know that. I didn't know you smoked. I never.
First, you know, like a 20-year period, I smoked.
And what about drinking? Did you ever do that?
The drinking never, like, did it for me because my dad drank, so. I used to smoke marijuana, but that was a young thing. I had my little bouts with drugs.
Right.
But drugs never, I'm a food addict.
Are you kidding?
No, I'm seriously a food addict. I mean, that's my addiction. I go to Overeaters Anonymous and, you know, food groups and stuff like that. I work really hard on during the pandemic. I was lucky enough to lose 40 pounds. And,
yeah, you look great. You actually really, truly do. I've known you forever.
I'm trying to and I've been pretty successful not compulsively eating anymore.
It's hard when you get into that.
I wish I could compulsively, you never hear a guy, well, I guess they do, compulsively exercising.
Oh, they do.
They do, though. But
just go on Kevin Hart's Instagram and you'll be motivated to do at least one sit-up.
Mm-hmm.
He is quite motivating, that Kevin Hart.
He's amazing.
He is amazing.
You know, I always say, people talk about his success and I go, I know this. I heard this a long time ago. He was the first guy in the club And he was the last guy to leave the club in
Philly. I remember.
And I said, that guy, that's why he's so successful.
His work
nobody just walks into it. You have to work at it.
Oh, my God. He works harder than anybody, and then he works out harder than anybody.
Can I ask you a question?
Please.
What's left for you that you'd like to do?
A lot of things. That's what I was going to say.
But I mean, just like one...
Directing. I want to direct. I'd like to direct. I would say several, but I'd like to direct one really wonderful movie that works for everybody, which is impossible. But yeah. or works for a lot of people.
I think you have that in you.
Well, that's the hope.
I always think somebody should do a movie. We're Around the World in 80 Days. Is that the name of it?
Yeah.
Those old movies that were so funny with everybody in it.
Well, that's actually what we're talking about. Well, we're talking about doing a sequel to Dirty Work that I did with Norm Macdonald that I directed.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, that's the point. And a lot of people have agreed to do that cameo, like Mad World. So that's what we're pushing. But nothing's in stone yet because MGM was just bought by Amazon. So I'm seeing if I can get my directing gig just by ordering it on the app.
That should be part of it, don't you think, Bob?
I think so. You can go right on.
One person every year is going to get a directing gig that signs up.
You can cast it on Amazon.
Yes. Yes, that would be right.
And but then you can delete your order if you don't want that actor. You just hit the X.
I think we could all. I think we could all do. I mean, I think you could do that. I think you should do it. And I think what means something to you is what you should do. That's what I always say. I'd like to play. I wanted to play Fatty Arbuckle.
I remember this
part. But you know, it's not really like nobody knows who he is, and they want to make him. Guilty, was acquitted, and I just wanted this. I wanted to have the part. Jeff Wayne has been, you know, pushing. He wants to do the courtroom drama because there's a beautiful courtroom drama in that. And you know, Byron Allen has all those court shows. We could do that quite easily. We talked about doing that, but you know, I have just opened my heart, and whatever work comes my way, like this 20s show. I'm thrilled that somebody wants me to work for him.
Well, Louis, you just also had a complete resurgence, which many people, it happens to some, but it doesn't happen to most people, where, you know, winning the Emmy, and not that awards are the answer, but the work is the answer, but you did both, and, you know, people know how great you are now. You don't have to do the tap dance.
You know, I always like people say, will you audition? I go, yeah.
Right.
Of course. I don't have a problem auditioning. I want to do it. You know, I want to bring Life with Louis back. I'd like to do that. I think it'd be really fun to do an animated show with a bunch of comics because none of us have to be there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a really big thing. I think Dr. Show, is that what it was called? Not Dr. Show, but
Dr. Katz.
Jonathan
Katz.
That. Yeah, he does that. I like that show.
I love him.
He's great.
I read your book when it was out, but it's such a long title. I want to get it right, which is Hey, and you've written many books. So, you know, you're four of them, and not that you wouldn't remember, but Hey Mom, Stories for My Mother, comma, but you can read them too. See, that's you to me. That's just like, here's the title and here's a little conversation to go with it.
Well, you know, I wrote a letter to my mom while I was making baskets because I hadn't really talked to her since she died in 1990. You know, I hadn't really written her because I'm a kind of guy who will write people letters even after they're gone and just keep them. But just, you know, it's the idea of the action. And so I wrote this wonderful letter to my mom that I love. And I sent it to my manager and my good friends. And, you know, and my manager said, this could be a book. And I said, yeah, I guess it could. And then I thought, oh, do I want to write a book? Because it's a lot of work to write a book. And so then we sold the book. And then it worked out because I had a dear dad where I wrote letters to my dad. And I had a lot of questions for my mom, especially after I played her. And the book's been well received. And my intention for books is, can it help me? And if it can help me, maybe someone else can get a little light out of it.
I think that's how you approach everything. That's why it's so wonderful.
It's true. Well, the same for you, Bob. We're not doing this just for us, even though it might seem that way. It might seem that way, but that's not really who we are.
No, that's what touches me the most. Because some people go, oh, look at you. And you know, in the 2000s when I came out of the gate, and oh, he's blue. And it's like, well, but did you listen to the content? Because it wasn't just those words. It was... I was still crying about my dad's death in the middle of that.
Yeah, but you're funny in it all too. It's not irreverent. It's not irrelevant. It's you. It's part of you. And I'm not sure you could do stand up a different way.
I've tried.
I think it fits you better. I think can't what you help do it. Fits you better.
I mean, look at me. I look like your dentist.
Well. I mean, you know, I just went to the dentist. I'm so thrilled for dentists sometimes. I chipped my front tooth.
Right.
Trying to open something. Like, it's so ridiculous. But
what were you opening?
Oh, just some sort of, you know, they make plastic now that you could shoot a bullet into and it wouldn't open.
What were you trying to get in?
I'm sure it was a food item.
Was it liquid or was it?
No, it was just like a, you know, that plastic that you cannot open. You think you can open it, and your hand strength is gone. At 55, you lose your hand strength.
You could get those things, those exercise things, springs.
I have those where I do that.
Right.
But then I go, is that it? Do I have to do it all the time? And I still cannot, some things I can't get open, so.
Now, why do we go to our teeth to open up plastic that you know is impenetrable?
And I was able to open that thing, but it did cost me $1,500. So,
did you?
Well,
get...
worth it though. When I got my when he fixed my teeth, I went, "You're a genius! You're a genius!" I was.
Have you learned your lesson? Would you go back into the plastic?
I found myself earlier today. With cough drops, I go, don't stop it.
Your throat won't hurt, but you'll have no teeth.
Mm-hmm. I'll be two teeth Louie.
Oh my God, that's the name of
a
great series.
You always do this joke. He goes, I'm going to the dentist at, I'm going to the dentist, tooth 30. And I always, like at first, I'm so dumb. I didn't get it the first time. And then I went, I just love it. He did it all the time. He still does it.
I know. But it can't, he can't
Zach
do it.
Zach is a genius, man.
But Zach is completely a genius. So tell me about that. So the minute you showed up, it just, the connection happened and you were off and running?
No, I don't think he likes me at first.
Really?
No, I think he likes me, but. You know, Zach is a prankster, you know, and he, you know, he's completely opposite of what I'm selling.
He does mind games with his talents, with his acting talents.
Yeah, he tortured me on one hand, but in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
It was good for me. And I felt very much like his mother. So I often... Chap. I'll be at an airport and I'll just yell that out. And people whip their head around.
You did something on Conan where you started yelling. What were you yelling on Conan? Yeah.
The louder I can be with Zach, the more irritated it got him, I think. But then he would finally laugh.
Well, do you think it has to be that, and no, we don't, but the last thing comedians need is to be analyzed. You know, why are you like this? But it's his self-preservation also, I would think, from his childhood and stuff, to be able to stare people down.
Yeah, and I think he was one of several kids. So I think you learn to be funnier whatever you need to do to survive. And I think his dad was very funny, and he really loved his dad. And I think he, you know, he's a prankster. And, you know, he, to me, he's like an old time physical comic, like, exactly. You know, Harold Lloyd or Chaplin, or he's those kind of people. You know, he loves physical stuff. He'd fall all the time.
Right.
Or trip or spill something, or, you know, I love that about him.
But when I used to watch his stand-up, which people go, oh, boy, he was an overnight star. Yeah, okay, 15, 20 years of stand-up. Yeah, yeah. So super talented, musically, so brilliant. Yeah. And then I watched, when I watched the first episode of Baskets, that thing where he's a clown, and it does feel like a French film. It really does.
So beautifully done. And Jonathan Kreisel and him together.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody involved in that, the writing, they made a beautiful, you know, Renoir, to say the least, you know,
mm-hmm.
Just a beautiful portrait. And, you know, I just was lucky to be in such a, you know, such an unusual situation and a wonderful network like FX that would allow you to make a show that not too many people really watch, but the ones who did really loved it and needed it.
Right. And it, do you feel like it was everybody feeling okay, it's reached its end when the network?
No.
Right. So the network.
I want to do this now. I've told them, let me do Christie Mysteries with Martha, where we look for people's pets. Pet, you know, like pet napping. Like, I just think it would be funny. And Zach can just, you know, put his name on it and come by once a year and say, oh, hi.
And, have you gone in and pitched it? Maybe Eric Schreier would bring
FX
it back.
FX does not want to do it. FX does not want to do it. But, and I'm not sure Zach does. It's his show. But I definitely think people miss the Christine character. And I definitely am not done with that. I would like to do a few more seasons with that.
Maybe they'll let you do something if they, you know, everybody.
You know, I think if somebody got behind it and wanted to produce it, and or somebody, you know, wanted to do it, it's one of those things. I think they accomplished their goal in making it. And I just want to do it because the character, I love the character and it's so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
And Martha, her and I together are really great.
She's amazing.
I don't dwell on it.
Well, Zach,
I will tell you this, Bob. There's going to be a very special guest on my special on Rush Ticks, the 12th
right.
of June.
Yep.
From Baskets.
Oh, that's going to be fulfilling.
And it's not going to be Zach. I mean, but unless he says he wants to do it. Then
well, there's
say, yeah.
Chip. There's Chip and Dale. So
maybe and neither of them are coming.
You know, he did my scleroderma benefit. He's got a giant heart, that guy.
Oh, he's got a huge heart.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's a lovely human, a great father, a great husband, really good kisser.
I heard that.
Yeah. No, but he's just such a nice human being. He would talk to everybody on this set. Every Friday, he would bring a different truck for all the actors, crepes or macaroni and cheese or, you know, the pizza truck or, you know, just these, you know, these food trucks.
Now, he didn't just bring that.
He was working late Friday night and out of his own pocket. He would just do all those things. And they never wanted any credit for it, but I knew he did it.
But do you know that that was supposed to be a practical joke? Because it always pulled up right next to your trailer. Okay, the break's over. So what do we are in a different world. And I know you've been talking about it because you've been doing a lot of press these past couple years. Where, you know, jokes we do now, you know, you do jokes that are self-deprecating about eating and weight, but there's people that are, you know, fat shamed. And have you had to deal with any of that? Have people said stuff to you?
You know, I don't do jokes that are fat jokes. I do jokes about people myself who happen to be fat and my circumstances in that. So I try, I'm not trying to make fun, but
you
I
never have.
I know immediately what joke I can and can't do. Because I've always been that guy who's like, I go, well, this isn't going to, I'm not going to offend anyone. That's not my goal. So,
right.
I mean, early on, I did jokes I could never do again. I did some of them on Conan. I can't do those jokes anymore.
No, right.
I am going to do a special where I retire all my fat jokes that I can't do anymore. And I'm going to do a Vegas special, all my Vegas material.
Oh, that's fantastic. Because mm-hmm. Jerry did all of his best jokes mm-hmm. on a special. So
Jerry, Seinfeld. Yeah.
Yeah. I was trying to think of other Jerrys. Jerry Lewis isn't around. I wish Jerry Stiller was around. I love Jerry Stiller.
Yeah, I love Jerry. Hey, I don't want to be remiss and not say I didn't have the most wonderful time making Coming to America. I really enjoyed it. And they were really great to me. Eddie and Arsenio, and to hang with them at Amazon, were just so great to me also. I did a lot of great stuff in it.
And I just had
a small purchase. I know, before, but it was right away, and it was beautiful how they, you know, did it. And Chuck did a great job. And Eddie, I commend them for after 33 years being able to address all the questions they were going to have for a sequel like that.
Right, right. And it was Eddie that wanted you immediately for it, right?
I don't know, because I never tracked that stuff, but I did get a call. So yeah, I'm pretty sure don't you think every question goes through Eddie?
I would think.
Yeah. And he's always been nice to me. I used to, you know, always talk to him. And I guess I was the token white guy in the first one. I didn't even know it, Bob.
Right.
They said Paramount said he had to have a white person in the movie. And him and Arsenio said, well, we think Louis Anderson is the funniest white guy we know, which was very sweet of them.
Right. That's right.
But I had no idea for 33 years. I had no idea that existed.
Well, maybe they'll make another one. I don't know.
I doubt it.
Well, so it's maybe definite.
They definitely should make the barbershop movie of all those guys.
Right. Barbershops. That's insane. Those movies, Cedric on those movies is,
oh my God. That's so good.
Well, that's not unlike what you did in Baskets. What he did in that movie, and Cedric talked to me about it. He was up for another part, and he said, no, I want to be him. I forgot the character's name.
Yeah, me too.
And he blew it out of the water. It was just so organic.
Guys, you know, we're in this beautiful club. We're in the beautiful club, this beautiful comedy club.
I get to know you still. I mean, that's like a gift to me.
How many years? Let's see, 81.
78 is when I moved to L.A. and was at the comedy store.
I came at 81.
And you
78 is when I first did stand-up.
Right. Where were you?
Minneapolis.
Right. I think we saw each other there. I think you were working mm-hmm. there, and I was there for David Wood had a comedy club or something.
Yeah, I think you're right.
We were there at the same time, I think.
Because David Wood had the first non-smoking comedy club. You remember that?
No.
He had the first non-smoking comedy club.
So your dad couldn't go.
Neither could I back then.
Louis, so now the world is changing constantly, more than it ever has. Things that we say, I wouldn't say today, especially me, much more so than you, would not say things that I said 10 years ago, 20 years ago, definitely. And I started my first 5 minutes, I wouldn't say.
Yeah.
Although it's funny, because it was coming from where it was coming from, but
it's individually, they individually choose who can say what.
Right.
And I think sometimes you can say it when you're saying it and it gets a response, but then somebody else sees it And then they leap and put judgment on it. And then it has a mind of its own, and then you get in trouble for it. But, you know, I think, I don't know. I've always been lucky.
Yeah.
I just don't say, you know, like I'm going to talk about all the people I know, mm-hmm. all the things I know. Some people might not like what I'm going to say about parents and, you know, losing your parents and that in that particular thing I'm going to do. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, I'm going to talk from my heart. So anything can happen.
And it's interesting that it's different than it was, because as we get older, I'm completely different. The new stuff I'm doing.
Oh,
it's
yeah. This,
it's completely.
Well, we've always been with the times, though, Bob. We've always caught up to the.
Right.
We're present. I think that the most important thing to be is present right now in the world.
Absolutely.
To be present. And that this was like, that was the enjoyable thing about this. I didn't have to think, well, what will this be like? What's going to Bob want to talk? And I go, I don't have to worry about any of that.
No,
but I mean, because we are who we are. We're very much more similar than not similar. So
all I ever want to do is hug you. Like
you're so sweet.
No, I would virtually hold you. Teeth look good.
They do, don't
That's
they?
That's going to be the shot I'm going to use in the promo.
Do it here.
I have to know who your dentist is.
Dr. Rudner in Beverly Hills.
Any relation to Rita?
No, but you know, it was nice to see that name.
Did you ever have root canal done?
Yes, I've had every kind of canal done.
The Panama?
Uh-huh. I have he's going to do a couple of implants. I have a couple of implants to do. He's fixed my teeth, though, like these teeth. Like when he goes down with it, I was really a little choked up because they look so good. And I agonized over how, you know, I'm a kid at heart. And, you know, I was a poor kid. So, I don't want people to make fun of my teeth. Right. You know, they did make fun of my teeth. And I would never get braces because I liked them. So, I was so happy when he fixed my teeth. It's so silly, but we're always that kid that didn't have or something that we were embarrassed about. We're still embarrassed about it.
Yeah. That's what I've always done.
Yeah.
Comedically to compensate. But as a person, I think I'm more quiet and nice than I am caustic and aggressive. I mean, I've never seen you be aggressive though.
Yeah, rarely. I'm not, you know, usually, especially now, like this world is so harsh at times that it breaks my heart. Just some of the stuff that people are doing to each other out there. But mostly I say put love on things, mm-hmm. you know, and just try to, you know, do things that are loving and caring and kind. And, you know, we have to change the way we think about everything. You know, we've had a rough year, especially Minneapolis, my hometown, St. Paul I was from, but, mm-hmm. you know, the whole thing, you know, with George Floyd and that whole thing, that's a year anniversary of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was harsh. That's harsh. All that stuff is harsh. And I feel like sad about all of it, even though I don't necessarily think you should necessarily dwell on this. It's not where I was going. I guess what I'm going is there's a lot more to think about in this world now, in a different, more conscious way than there was for us when we were starting out. We weren't responsible for as much deep, conscious, woke thinking than we are now. And we really have to be aware of it, because we're still examples to a lot of people.
Yeah, you're right. And that is what I feel the pain of it. And I feel a responsibility now, and have been. And I'm going out and doing stand-up again now. And I just don't want to I didn't think of my words and what,
yeah,
what they, how they could hurt people. And even though so many people were laughing, I didn't hear from anybody. I didn't know anything. I'd read a review now and then, but some of them, you know, very rarely did I get skewered. And now I'm realizing, wow, I have a, but we're able to change it. We're able to change ourselves and not go, this is how it's going to be. This is how I did it. And I'm not changing. Well, you know, that's just, you have to change.
Instead of the jokes on you, Bob, the yolk's on you.
The
not
yolk.
The yolk, the woke.
The woke's on
you. I've screwed. Instead of the yolk's on you, Bob, the woke's on you. Because it's really about being woke right now. And it's hard to do and to keep aware of. But, you know, if you are going to fight that, then you're going to have problems. If you are going to be conscious of it and respectful of all people, you're going to be okay.
Whenever people go, or whether it's social media or in people I come in contact with, in an interview or just a human talking to me, and they want to give me a criticism of something I've done, I'll beat them to it because I'm already, and I'm working on it. So that's, I'm a work in progress. And that's what keeps us alive and, like you were saying, relevant and wanting to make people feel good and enjoy the hell out of it ourselves without hurting anybody.
I love you, Bob.
I love you, Louie.
Have a great one.
Travel safe. I'm going to Dr. Rudner.
Let's see each other soon, huh?
I would love to see you. And it'll be in Vegas. That's where you'll be?
Yeah, I'll be in Vegas.
And when are you performing again?
I think maybe the first week in June, but June 12th for my special for sure.
Okay.
I've been dropping in and doing sets at different places. So wherever you are, I'll probably drop by and do a set.
I will. I can't wait to see you and hug you. And where can we see the special June 12th?
Rush Tix. RUSHTIX. June 12th. Virtual. Louie Anderson. Live from Las Vegas.
I love you, Louie.
I love you too, Bob Saget.
Be well. Travel safe.
Mwah.
Love you.
Love you.
Bye. Well, that's my friend, Louie Anderson. How can you not love Louie Anderson? I just learned a lot from Louie Anderson, for myself personally. Isn't it? He's just so calming. There's something about his energy and the way he looks at life and his honesty about himself. And he's a very, very special human being. And I remember learning a lot from him, just knowing him. And he was younger than me and came out to LA a few years after I'd gotten there. And we were in a very special time in comedy. And damn it, we continue to be. And damn it in a good way. Damn it, we're going to do it. We're going to keep doing it to make ourselves and other people happy. Louie Anderson, if you haven't seen Baskets, it's on Hulu. Watch all of it. It's just amazing what he did. Watch his specials. He's got tons of them. Get his book, which is Hey Mom, Stories for My Mother, but you can read them too. And that's from 2018. The man, also Life with Louie, you can find. He won 2 Emmys for that animated series, which he says he might do again, which would be amazing. So that is Louie Anderson. Go see his stand-up. When he's back performing, just go see it. And his special coming up just a few weeks. So get there. And this is on the YouTube page, if you want to go there, which is youtube.com/Bob Saget. I don't like that /Bob Saget. That just sounds violent. But, and you know where to find this thing, because you're listening to it. So I'm sending you my best. Lots of love.